For those who don't know my story, when I was 12 years old, I was diagnosed with Tourette's and I was on medication for almost 10 years. When I was 21, I learned something called The Secret and I came off the medication overnight against everyone telling me to stay on it, and I had a spiritual awakening. I meditated for 3 weeks straight and my Tourette's disappeared, and I created the podcast to simply preach about everything that most people have in their head but no one ever speaks about, which is what the twitching was. It was too many thoughts inside my head, and now I have a platform where I can speak to people and they can get out what's in their head. I have just launched my first course and it's called Take Control, and it's basically the system that I went through when I was 21 and I had my awakening. It's the same system that I've done for my parents and close friends and family members, and it's changed their life. Individual steps that we don't see as much, but when you put it together as part of a life that you have to maintain and manage, it's life-changing. So check out the course. And if you feel inclined to buy it, buy it. I reckon that it will really change your life if you're going for a spiritual awakening, because I once was, and these steps changed my life. So if you go to talkwitholiver.com and you'll see that my course is there, it's called Take Control. If you buy it and go through it, reach out to me on Instagram and socials and let me know how you get on and what you thought of the course. So if I could ask a favour from all my listeners, upon looking at my stats recently, it has occurred that out of a very humbling 730,000 downloads since I created the podcast back in 2019, that only 10% of you that listen have actually followed and subscribed to the podcast. If I could ask a massive favour from you all that listen, if you wouldn't mind just hitting that follow and subscribe button, it would mean more than you can imagine, and it really does help the show grow and help reach more people in more ways than you and I can even imagine. The bigger the podcast gets, the bigger the guests get. And my aim is to grow the show big enough that I can reach out to amazing people like Russell Brand, Joe Dispenza, Lewis Howes, Grant Cardone, Joe Rogan, and have deep, intimate, and vulnerable one-to-one conversations with them. I want to speak to the human side of people to show we're all the same when you get to the core, regardless of how much money or fame you have.
Some form of peace and understanding and being able to shed a lot of that self-importance. So it's all of
it. So if you could have a life, you could have a life where it just always goes plain sailing and there's no issues, and you can say the only bad thing in life to fear is the death of a loved one, but apart from that, everything goes smoothly. That life versus a life where there's always a problem, there's a leak in the house, there's an issue at work where salesman fucks off, so find someone else, and you know, stuff like that. You could choose one path or the other, knowing the benefits and the cons from each path. What would you choose?
I would choose the latter. Otherwise, what's the point? If everything was smooth sailing, there's really no reason to be here. It's learning. Now, my own intent here was to gather as many experiences as I possibly could. I feel as if I've lived four lifetimes already at the age of 50 and different stages. I wouldn't appreciate where I am today if I hadn't slept in the back of a car, you know, in my early 30s and really struggling. And now there's a lot of joy. It doesn't mean things are easy. My wife and I had gone through it over the last year. It was really intense. But knowing that we come back together, and if it hadn't been intense, you know, to the point where it's like, do we even want to do this anymore? I wouldn't be able to sit in the space with her. It's like, okay, we're back again. And being able to support each other in our own growth and expansion. So I would choose, and I mean, shit, I have chosen the harder path. And in choosing the harder path, it's led me back to the easier path. And so there's hard, and there's the side of, you know, being easy. And if your only fear is that, you know, losing that of a loved one, I don't know that that even exists. Because if you have a perspective that life persists, then you know in some aspect that that person, you know, is just moving on to their next experience. And so it's not too far left. It's not too far right. It's not too far up or down or forward or backward. It's the middle path, the middle way. and sitting in the space of moderation. Now, for me, in my own experience, that felt a lot like deprivation. And that could have been my Catholic upbringing, where if I did something bad, I'd punish myself or go to hell and participate in some form of self-flagellation. But I'm settling in, and it's a lot like the sand in the river, the mud in the river, just beginning to settle in and find a little bit of peace. But that wouldn't have been possible if I hadn't had, if I hadn't put myself through that form of suffering or that level of suffering.
You know,
So.
when I think, because I have a comfortable life and I don't really have the struggle of what most people have. So when something that's negative, it's like, fuck, my whole life's coming to an end. And then I reflect on what most go through, and it's not even like a percentage. And then I think, what did human beings have to struggle years ago? So let's just say a duck would have 10 ducklings, three would get run over, the mother duck's lost three ducklings. Or they don't know when the next going to get food. They've gone to a lake in the area. There's no fish, and they can die tomorrow. Really, the only fears of nature was, losing somebody in the pack, or not being able to eat and drink. And that alone is scary, because that translates to, what if you can't afford to pay your bills? You become homeless. What if you can't afford food? You die. It's just that there's far more. It's more extreme. It's the same, but it's more extreme. And then I think, well, these small problems are going to happen. There is no life for any animal on this planet, billions of years or now, that doesn't have some form of stress, whether it's a donkey in the field shivering because it's cold, or because he's got wet, or he's not got any food, or he's not got any drink, or so there's no perfect life where there's just a free run. Every time, every living thing has its form of stress. The human stress is different or more extreme or, just made up.
Yeah, and I don't believe that there's any level of future tripping in the life of a wolf, right? It's food, shelter, or an octopus, right? And the lifespan on an octopus that's in the wild is very short, and they are incredibly intelligent beings. And in fact, they're probably the closest things to aliens, with the exception that at some point we had shared DNA with them or shared genomes. And being able to model after that level of presence. And maybe you've had an experience where you've aligned yourself or felt very aligned with some form of an animal or a spirit animal. And being able to include that and being very present and in the moment, in the now. It's not easy. But when you look at a pack of wolves, there's always a wolf that's out front. The natural inclination from a human perspective is to perceive that wolf as being the leader. In fact, that wolf that's out front is actually the weakest link. It could be the one that's ill. It could be the one that is, the oldest, and certainly in all cases, is the one that moves the slowest. And so that pack of wolves is behind them to make sure that they are supported. We don't do that, certainly not here in Western culture, with our elders, the ones that are ill, and having community around them and being able to support and take care of them.
That's really interesting. I've never heard that. So you're saying that rather than the alpha being at the front of the pack, the strongest, it's one that's non-alpha, and actually the strong are behind, as almost to say, I feel safe in the middle of the pack, and I can see when you fall or the threats that you're going to face, so I can sort of get out of it. Whereas if you're at the front, you have to face the say, collision head on, even though you can fall back and protect yourself.
Absolutely. There's another example, Oliver, of buffalo or bison. And I'm very grateful to have had the experience to, be reasonably close to them. When the weather becomes inclement, or the blizzards are coming in, or a massive snowstorm, or a massive windstorm, they don't look for shelter. What they do is turn around and they face the storm head on. because they know at some level, consciously or unconsciously, that the best way to is through. And rather than running from something, being able to take a look at it head on and turn your head into that direction is everything.
Yeah, that's amazing, because you know, a lot of people these days, they run from issues, and issues just build up and build up and build up. Whereas the issue's there or it isn't. So if you have to face it at some point, you may as well face it now. And I'll speak to somebody about, you know, having the belief that God has a plan, meaning let's just say your business suddenly collapses. You instantly think God has a plan, and you don't get scared, you don't run, you don't worry. You just head it face on. God has a plan. Get myself out of it. I wonder what's around the corner. Maybe there's another business or a better business. And if you face the fear, like I do a lot of ice baths, your brain can overcome that feeling of, fuck, I want to get out. And every time you stay in there, next time you realize when you get to that same state of, fuck, I want to get out, your other brain goes, well, no, don't be so stupid, because you've done this 70 times. Why do you need to get out? And then you go, okay. And then you end up being 5 minutes. And then you're like, what was all the fuss about? And you face that fear.
Yeah, I do believe that suffering is optional, right? So to your point, it's really about your relationship to that experience. And you either choose to suffer and like, why the fuck am I sitting in a bathtub of ice? Or knowing that this has been going on for some amount of time. You know, if you're Norwegian, it's just a way of life. And it does a lot for you physiologically. But suffering, in my experience, is an option. It's, you know, it is something that is perceived by us as humans. We don't have to suffer. It's really a matter of perspective.
It's like you've got the suffering of, let's say, your business is collapsing for whatever reason, right? And you've got to get out of this. You're like, fuck, fuck, fuck. I've got to get through this. That suffering versus, so for example, that suffering for days and days and weeks versus suffering of being in ice water for 20, 25, 30 minutes, an hour, 2, 3 hours. It's like, what would you choose? Because it's both suffering, but what would you choose? And then you could say, well, if ice water is even more suffering and I can cope with that, then I can cope with getting my way out of this shit out of the business at work, trying to get out of this. And therefore, when that happens and you get the call like, okay, we're going down, you can cope because you've coped with being in ice water for an hour. So it's like, well, I can deal with anything because it can't get much worse than that.
Right. Question for you. Do you believe that God has a purpose for us at an individual level?
I personally believe that there is no man in the sky called God. I do believe that everything that happens is a result of you attracting it or attracting towards it based on your thought and what you visioned or wanted. And then when you're there, you can either stay there or think of new stuff and move forward. And if something bad happens, you simply have a choice to watch it and do nothing or move forward. So the God has a plan thing for me is about, I have no choice but to do something about this situation. So why would I worry? God has a plan. If God has a plan, why am I worrying? So I'm basically becoming God, thinking there's a plan. I'm telling myself, okay, this has happened. My business is collapsing. I've got two choices, moan about it or build it and move forward. And that's the God has a plan part. God doesn't have a plan, so I don't believe in God. It's merely I'm the God and I have to have a choice to get out of this or to sit and moan about it. And that's with everything. If there's a leak in your house, you can blame the wife for not turning off the tap, or you can call the plumber straight away and then teach your wife how to turn the tap off next time. So, you know, that's my definition of God has a plan.
Yeah, I certainly don't believe that there's some old man in the sky that you can ascribe responsibility to. They're fairy tales of blood and wine. They are, I think the only thing that's ever saved my life, not think, I know this, is love. And when I've had experiences in some sort of structure of God or source, it's because I've looked into the eyes and I've been seen and I see God in the eyes of my best friends.
Yeah, so you can say that God, somebody is protecting us, looking after us there when we need him, there to call on. That's exactly what friends and family is. So you could say if someone has good friends and family, a good support system of friends and family, then they would look to God. And you could also say that people who turn to God often turn to God in times of crisis or when they haven't got anybody. But really it all comes down to having somebody to kind of feel your pain, or hope feels your pain, and not feeling alone in a world that seems so massive.
Yeah, no, and we're not alone, but not everybody is in a position where they can understand that. And I get it. I since you and I have last spoken, I was diagnosed as having bipolar. And like, oh my goodness, that explained 30 years of behavior. And in the past, I would have isolated and certainly felt sorry for myself. But I was in a position where not only with my wife, but also with my group of friends, being able to talk through this. And the reality is that just about all of them have some form of a mental illness or where their brain isn't operating optimally. And having community and having friends that will call you out on your bullshit, that will listen and can talk through this and have some form of empathy, that brings me great joy in knowing that I have a group of friends. I've built community here, which is kind of challenging in Santa Monica because it's so transient, where we care so deeply about each other, where they're not always easy conversations, right? There is confrontation. There is challenging behaviors, or, hey, Chris, I've noticed this in you over the past few weeks. What's going on? And community to me equals love, and love to me equals community. And I've found so much joy and so much peace in doing that.
What about people who call out your bullshit and they run? So holding me accountable, let's say a friend acting like a twat, and you say, listen, mate, you're the dickhead, stop it. That's good. That you want to be told those bad traits to change. But what if there's people that know these bad traits and they run and they're not in your life anymore? How do you deal with that?
It's interesting because I talked about this with a friend of mine yesterday, and it depends on how you set up the relationship. One, did you position yourself as some form of big brother or big sister or some sort of guru where you're holding someone or you're being held? Some folks, when they run, it's because they, coming back to that point, because you remind them of some aspect of themselves that they're not willing to deal with. On the other side of that, it's wanting to keep good company or keep holy company. And if you feel like someone's energy or their values are not aligned with your own, run. Don't include them in your life. You don't need that. Ideally, someone does call you out. But that, from a humility perspective, means that perhaps you didn't set the relationship up the right way the first time. And, having some level of self-importance, or I'm going to help this person, or I'm individually qualified to save them from this, isn't healthy. And it's an opportunity for us to learn and grow in how we show up.
Yeah. So I had a friend who, sensitive person, and we just suddenly our friendship ended because I lacked empathy. And really, if you translate what that means, is that on some level in his eyes, I wasn't giving him the thing that he would want from a friend. So whether that was simply agreeing to his belief system, or not having the same enthusiasm to something he believes in, or deep down knowing that I know that that thing isn't realistic, for example, or knowing that I know that you've not dealt with some stuff and I don't want to say it because we might fall out. And as you're saying, the inevitable is that if you didn't build the relationship right in the first place, it was always going to crumble. So if you're holding things back, just like a relationship before you split up with an ex, if you're holding things back to keep the relationship strong, the relationship shouldn't really be there. So it's almost like recognizing Is this person as they are more important than not having them at all? Knowing that, you should have said something, done something at the early stages and have it not come as far. Let's say you've fell in love with somebody who's got credit card debt, married them, and you didn't realize that they had credit card debt. And, that does affect you. And only after you've got married do you realize it. Foundation of stuff is important, but it's tricky because you deep down want the person, but then you also tell the truth. They might not be there. So what do
Right.
you do?
Yeah. It's, and if you're open to understanding the why, then it's possible to learn and grow in that relationship. The warning sign is if someone's not willing to change. And if someone doesn't view that as being important, so we talk about credit card debt or being in debt to anyone or anything, then you don't want to align yourself with that person. The way that my bipolar would show up is in spending money you don't have, or reckless sexual behavior, or any form of impulsiveness, and damn the consequences. Fortunately, Meredith has participated in my own understanding of what this state is and is willing to support me. I'm very fortunate in that I've got a team of people that have helped me from a psychiatric perspective, from a psychological perspective, in giving me a better understanding of how and why I operate. And if there's a willingness for someone to understand what their triggers are, or moving into some form of anxious state, or hypomania, or even mania or depression, there's a lot of value there, but we do need to protect ourselves first. And I've been able to learn over time that I'm not in the business of saving people. It's self-important, it doesn't scale, and it's not a great way to live life.
Okay, on that bombshell, anything you want to promote or plug before we wrap it up?
No, just live life. Figure out what your values are, what's important, and wake up and say, is this for the highest good? And use that as a filter and take advantage of every moment, every breath, the inhalation, the inspiration, the exhalation, and the exaltation, and live life.
Live life. Okay, Chris, well, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thanks for your patience with me, and I wish nothing but the best, and I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Yeah, we will speak soon, and I hope you have a great day.
Thank you. Take care of yourselves.
All right. Cheers, Chris. Bye-bye.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.